Welcome to the NCO Journal podcast, where we explore NCO professional development. This is a podcast series where we discuss published articles with authors and provide a forum for the open exchange of ideas, information, and solutions. I'm your host, Chago Zapata, managing editor of the NCO Journal. With us is Staff Sergeant Owen Thez, NCO Journal senior editor, and Sergeant First Class Brandon Cox, NCOIC of the NCO Journal. Today we discuss the article, Silent Suffering, Women's Health in the Army, by Staff Sergeant Mary Mosco. Before we kick things off, Mary, could you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, I'm Staff Sergeant Mary Mosco. I have been in the Army since March of 2017, so we're coming up on 9 years in this March. I started writing this probably about 2 years ago. The Army was never on my radar. And then a friend of mine, who later became my husband, he sent me a screenshot for the job posting for Intel Analyst, but he had blacked out where it said Army. And he said, I saw this and I thought you might be interested. The only downside is you might have to move. And I immediately said, this is exactly what I want. Where is this? And he was like, ha ha, gotcha.
And I hear you are in the Army.
And here I am in the Army, keeping it, you know, keeping going.
All right. Okay, tell us about your article. What is it about? What exactly, just tell us about that article, please.
So I wrote the article about endometriosis after a friend of mine from high school reached out to me, and he was letting me know that he and his wife are expecting a child. And he said, hey, before this like hit social media, I know that you've struggled. I just wanted you to know personally before it hit. And I said, okay, thank you. Appreciate that. And I got really angry. So I took out my laptop and I just started writing. And I said, we have to be better as leaders. We have to be better as just general human beings taking care of other human beings. We have to be better. So I just kind of wrote until I wasn't mad anymore, at least for that night. And a couple days later, I saw the all-call notice. It was one of those like, we'll just see what happens. But I wrote it to talk about how we can be better, what endometriosis is, how it affects readiness across the force, not just with the one soldier that's affected.
I know when you called me, actually, I'm the one who you talked to when you called, and your article was not, I'll say that it was, I don't remember, if I remember correctly, the conversation was that it didn't feel complete, and I'll be honest, it still sounds a little angry in places. I think that anger that you're talking about came through in the words that you wrote. But I thought it was powerful. It was a powerful message. And why shouldn't there be some anger? Because one of the things that, and I told you about, I have a daughter who has endometriosis and she's dealt with a lot of issues. And I would hazard to say that she's angry as well. She's dealt with it since it was diagnosed and when she was 15 years old. She's 26 now, and she's been dealing with all kinds of things. So I know that there's that anger, but also there's dismissal there, you know, from people who don't understand it, from people who don't understand, a lot of men, you know, who don't understand, you know, women's health in general, not just specifically endometriosis, but any sort of, you know, women's health issues. And there's a lot of assumptions that are made. And I don't think it's purposeful. A lot of times I think it's just either ignorance or misinformation or just making wrong assumptions based on whatever. And that's why we're here, you know, to talk about this and talk about your article, the purpose of it was and where you hope this will go as far as, you know, maybe you want to affect some change or things like that. Could you talk about that? Is that what you want to do, is affect change at the higher level?
Yes. So ideally, I want to see more medical professionals have better training and better understanding of what endometriosis is, but also the signs and symptoms that they should be looking for in their clinical assessments when they do have a female soldier come in. I'm sure that the medical side of the house, that they have continuing education or their own version of 350-1 training. And I would like to be able to sort of brief them with my experiences and say, hey, this is what it could lead to if you just pay a little more attention. If we start talking about policy change that I want to see, the VA just changed their policy where female veterans do not have to go through their PCM for gynecology services. I think for the active duty side, and I understand TRICARE is a completely different beast than the VA side, but I think that there should be something where if you go to your PCM for the same problem, or say four visits, I'm just spitballing numbers, but four visits in 6 months for the same problem, then you should either be given a referral or it should be documented in your chart. I am not submitting a referral for these issues, period. If we sort of take it from an NCO perspective, if I don't want someone to go to the promotion board and I don't think they're ready, I have to document that on paper. So I think that doctors should have to document, you've been seen X amount of times for this. I'm still not going to give you a referral because of XYZ. That way, if you have problems later, if you go to a different provider, they can already see that you've been seen X amount of times and you haven't been given a referral. I think I talk about it in my article. You know, I had been seen a dozen times for the same problems, and it wasn't until I was taken by ambulance to the emergency room that was on post where the ER doctor was absolutely flabbergasted, and he said, what do you mean you haven't received a referral? I said, he told me to, you know, drink peppermint tea. He told me that he was going to give me a profile to get me out of early morning PT. And they were dumbfounded that I had not been given one. And I had had documented issues for over a year.
Let's back up a little bit. I think that's something that we need to kind of explore a little bit more. But let's back up a little bit. Tell us about endometriosis. This is part of your story. You're talking about your story and where, you know, this is what you want to affect, the change that you want to affect based on your story. So tell us what it is. Once you tell us what it is, you know, think about what it is that NCOs or leadership should know about it.
So endometriosis is where tissue that is similar to the lining of the uterus, but is not the lining of the uterus, grows everywhere that it is not supposed to. Endometriosis lesions have been found on every organ in the body, to include the eyes, the nose. It's also been found recently in the brain. There's now some very beginning studies that it's been found in the skin. But essentially, it's that tissue that loses its mind and grows where it's not supposed to grow. It causes what's called tethering, where the amount of scar tissue and the amount of lesions basically freeze all of your organs together. Very uncomfortable. It's got four stages. And it's important to note that when I say that there are stages, that doesn't mean if somebody with stage four, they may have no pain. We're talking about staging in terms of the spreading of the disease, of the lesions, not how much pain a person may necessarily experience.
And it's also, from what I remember reading too, it's not curable. It's like something that you have it, you're going to have it for the rest of your life. Is that right?
Yes.
I told you about my daughter. She has that. She's been suffering from, also she gets cysts. So that's, I think that's another thing that does. And you know, she'll be laid out for days almost, because, you know, one of them will burst and she'll be in excruciating pain. Won't even say anything. I know that's one of the things that you talked about in the title of your article is silent suffering. My daughter wouldn't say anything. Just, you know, see her. She's acting a little moody and, you know, face is pale. What's going on with you? And then it's not until later that I realized that there was something else going on, and I didn't understand. And I think that's the main thing, is that a lot of people don't understand. Men don't understand that. For us, we kind of go through life, and a lot of times, you know, it's like, you know, just you get hurt or something's going on, you just rub some dirt on it and move on, you know. And it's not that case for women. You have deeper issues, and we need to be aware of them. And I think that's, for me, that was my learning experience, but not everybody's exposed to the kind of, you know, a family member who might have it. You said too that in your article that there are 1 in 10, you know, women have this condition. Is that the right way to refer to it too? Is it a condition or is it an illness, or what, how would we refer to it?
I've heard condition, disease, illness. Lots of people that I've talked to, they kind of like give it a name and they just say, you know, oh, Bob's acting up today, you know, curse Bob. I kind of go with any of them. I think it, and again, I'm not a medical doctor by any means, but I kind of view it more as a disease as opposed to a condition, because a condition makes it sound like you have the flu. Like, oh, it's a condition, you're just going to get over it. This isn't something that you necessarily get over.
Hi, Sarah Moscow. First of all, thank you for writing the story. It was an outstanding article that you gave us on your experience with some of your medical conditions, and I applaud you for that. I think more soldiers need to be outspoken about the, you know, their experiences that they have in the Army. I was curious, what were some of the early signs that you were, you know, kind of understanding that like something's going on?
So the biggest first sign that I had was just the absolute excruciating pain. I had an IUD at one point, and once I had it removed, that's sort of when all heck broke loose. And the first month, I could not stand up. I spent probably 4 days like physically in the fetal position, unable to move. That was kind of the first one. And then it progressed from there to the point where I was bleeding profusely, to the point where I was passing out. And my husband was finding me like in the shower, passed out. Cause I would usually go, hot water there's something to be said for heat, you know, heat therapy. But he would find me like almost passed out in the shower. And he was like, something has to be going on. He said, you need to go get this checked. And I came back and I was like, doc says I'm fine. Doc says like, this is normal. This is just part of being a woman. I was like, okay. You're the doctor, so I'm going to trust what you say, because I have no reason to not trust you.
Did you communicate these issues with your leadership at the time?
No.
And why did you feel like you couldn't?
I felt like I was already in somewhat of a good old boys club. For all of the strides that the Army has made, we're still mainly a male force. And when I was uncomfortable with it. All of my leadership, all of my supervisors, they were all male. And I was like, oh, that's just weird to come in and be like, oh yeah, I'm in a crappy mood today because I've spent the past 24 hours on my couch, but I have to go into work. So take a handful of ibuprofen and keep it moving.
Which comes to, you know, you being here in front of four dudes. And I know that's part of the issue, too, is the fact that it's very uncomfortable, not just for you ladies to talk about, because it is a very private and personal thing. And then, but talking about it with somebody, whether it's an NCO or whatever, but, you know, this is a serious issue, and NCOs need to be open and have an open door policy and be there just like you are for your male soldiers when somebody's having a pay problem. You know, maybe that's not a good comparison, I know, but, you know, just because there's other things that are going on with everyone, and you need to be as involved, excuse me, with that pay problem as you are with somebody who's having medical issues, regardless of what they are. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have to be open and professional. I think ultimately that's what it comes down to. You have to be professional as an NCO and advocate for your soldiers, regardless, you know, of what the issues are.
Yeah, I think that's important. And you put it in your article, right? You put it in from the creed, you know, I know my soldiers. And I think that's very important, because I don't think that it's necessarily important that NCOs that take care of soldiers know the signs and symptoms of endometriosis, but that they care and are compassionate when their soldiers come to them with issues and take them seriously, right? So I think that awareness is a big deal, but also compassion, right? And being there for your soldiers is the primary goal, because you can't know everything, but, you know, if you know your soldiers, then you can properly take care of them. So what's something that I think that you would find very important for most NCOs or all to take away, you know, as part of the awareness factor of this?
So I want to touch on what you said about the pay issue. I think that talking about this should be as normal as talking about the pay issue, because it's soldiers' health at the end of the day, whether it's their financial health, their mental health, their physical health, it's still part of soldier health. And that's what, as an NCO, I'm in charge of taking care of right now, my one specialist. I am supposed to take care of her. I am supposed to know her enough that when she comes in the room, I can look at her and say, something's not right this morning. What's going on? Like, did coffee shop mess up your coffee? Did you burn your toast? I'm supposed to be able to know her enough to have a conversation from, did you burn your toast? Or, hey, I know that you had a doctor's appointment last week. Are you satisfied with what your PCM told you? And if she says, yes, I am. Okay, cool. That's great. Move on. But if she says, yeah, I guess it's fine, whatever, I should be a good enough leader to say, let's close the door for a few minutes. Talk to me. What's going on? Because I know you enough to know that something is going on. Tell me how I can help you. But I think back to sort of your point about what I want people to know is it shouldn't be uncomfortable, number one. Mm-hmm. We talk about torn ACLs, we talk about broken bones. This shouldn't be any different. If you have a soldier who you think, hey, I think something's going on, then you should already be the type of leader where that soldier feels safe enough coming to you to say, hey, Sergeant, I don't feel good. And then if you, as the leader, you have the professionalism, say, okay, can you tell me what's going on? Do you feel comfortable? Is there somebody else maybe that you would feel more comfortable talking to? I think if we have to sort of start breaking down the barrier of, ew, gross, girl problems, that's yucky, don't talk to me about it, go talk to somebody else.
Do you think that you've seen an improvement in the NCO Corps with this type of stuff? You know, taking care and listening to soldiers?
I do. I will say I take a lot of responsibility in the beginning, because I was 28 when my medical issues really began. And at the age of 28, I was nervous to talk to people about this. I was hesitant. I can't imagine being 18 or 19 years old and having the strength to say something. But I've seen an improvement once I started bringing up my story. The people who I thought were going to think less of me were the people that actually stood in my corner and advocated the hardest for me when things got really rough. So I have seen a change.
You mentioned advocating. You know, I'll use my, I have three daughters. I'll use myself as an example here. I have three daughters, my wife, and whenever, even once they got a little older, you know, I would go to their doctor's appointments and stuff, and the doctors would ask them a question, and then they would turn to me to look, you know, to wait for an answer. You know, there were men, and it was like, I know that that's something that you talked about, that you touched on in your article, is that the doctors, and this isn't a bitch session. You know, this is a place to talk and to discuss not just the problem, but we need to know that there is a problem and talk about it, but also the fact that this is a place where we can talk about solutions. But one, that problem was that they would look and not listen to the answer. Now, my daughter, my wife, my people, my ladies would try to answer or would give a partial answer, and whatever, it would just go in one ear out the other, and they would look at me. You know, I don't know why you would look at me, dude. It's not happening to me. You know, I would guide them to look at whoever it was who was talking and say, you need to talk to her and ask her specifically. I'm here. And then, but there would be times that I would have to butt in and say, why, she just told you this, why are you going to doing that? So I was advocating for them, but I was also kind of a distraction. So I don't know. You mentioned that, you know, medical professionals need to be trained. They need to be not dismissive. And I think that's one of the things that got me about your article, is that you said that some of them are dismissive, and you dealt with that, especially since you had to, you know, go to a doctor 12 times for the same thing, and you get, you know, hey, drink some tea. Like, okay, yeah, dude, that's obviously, there's something more going on here. What's going on? So, you know, advocating for yourself, having somebody advocate for you, whether that's a spouse, family member, leader. I mean, I don't know. I would hope that my daughters would ask somebody to be there with them, somebody they trust, somebody who cares. And I think that's where NCOs come in. But would you talk about the medical aspect of it, and the medical profession aspect of your article?
So I want to make it clear, I'm not blaming the doctor who saw me 12 times and just kind of kept blowing me off, because once I really started down the rabbit hole of, after I'd been diagnosed, I was like, okay, what the hell just happened to me? I learned that in medical school textbooks, there's only about a paragraph about endometriosis. I don't know how long you're in medical school. I can imagine it's a really long time. But for there to only be a paragraph, that's not the doctor's fault for not knowing the information. That talks to a larger systemic issue of, we're not teaching the doctors to look for it. And it's not their fault for not being taught. But I think we're starting to get more awareness. We're starting to have more research. The doctors are where everything begins, especially for the Army, where we have to go through our PCM before we get a referral to go anywhere else. The dismissiveness, the gaslighting of, oh, well, there's nothing wrong with you. Take some Tylenol, change your socks, drink more water, is where things need to change. I can tell you that on the appointments when my husband came with me, I was believed more. The doctor would say, okay, so this is, you know, like, this is normal. And my husband would say, I'm picking her up off the floor. There's no way this is normal. And then it was, oh, okay, well, maybe we should do some extra testing. Maybe we should. I was like, did I not just say the same thing? But since you heard it from him, I guess now, since it's how it's affecting his life, now you're willing to do testing. So it's important to have somebody in your corner at the appointments. Even if somebody can't be there, we all have cell phones. Put them on speakerphone and say, hey, I have somebody who's, I'd like to get their opinion. I just want them to have my back while we're in this appointment. Okay, I can sit there on mute and I can just listen, and then I'll be your advocate. If you're here at Fort Leavenworth, I'll go to the appointment with you if you want me to. If you just need a phone call, I'll, you know, hey, wake me up, tell me when the appointment is, put me on speakerphone, and I'll be an advocate for you. That's what we should be doing as leaders, is being an advocate for everybody.
Let's talk about solutions, though. You know, we're talking about, you know, somebody being dismissive. Where can that be? I mean, that's something that, I don't know, it's a deeper problem, and I don't think it's got an easy solution. But you've been talking to people. You've been talking to people who can affect change, who can write policy, change policy, and make systemic changes. Can you tell us about that?
So I had to go, I wouldn't say I had to go. There was an LPD here with retired Sergeant Major of the Army Daly. My boss got an email one afternoon, and it just said, all enlisted personnel will attend the LPD. Okay, I'm just a lowly staff sergeant, so I went to the LPD. I ended up taking 4 pages of notes. It was an excellent LPD. But afterwards, I thought, I don't have anything to lose, so I'm just going to go ask him my question. Maybe he can point me in the right direction of one more person. And he asked me, he said, have you ever emailed the Surgeon General? And I said, well, with all due respect, no, I haven't just cold emailed a 3-star general. I can't think of anybody who would do that. And he pulled out his phone, he sent a text, and he said, well, now she's expecting your email. So went home that night, sent an email to her. I really thought that I was going to get like a form email back that says, thank you for contacting. I didn't. I actually got a response back. She connected me with her aide, and her aide and I have been talking, and she has taken my article as well as the PowerPoint brief that I've done at several locations now. And she is actually taking that to the DHA to really say, hey, this is a bigger problem than just a onesies and twosies kind of thing. This is a larger problem that we need to start taking care of.
It's interesting. As a Sergeant Major of the Army, you'll never know. If you never ask, but you said it. You know, if you don't ask, you'll know. You're at no anyways. But what if he says yes? And, oh, look, here's Lieutenant General, Surgeon General of the Army. Boom. Mm-hmm.
First off, Sergeant Mosco, you're not a lowly staff sergeant. But, no, your experience is very valuable, and, you know, you're doing it. You wrote your article. You stated your case with all your experience, and you're here you are making an impact. So I commend you for that, right? And I think more NCOs, more junior soldiers even, need to be writing about their stuff and their experiences and stuff like that, because it's valuable to the force. And it's valuable for leaders to read, because then they get to see, you know, kind of keep their eye and their finger on the issues that are happening. So thank you.
I've personally known a lot of people throughout my life that had endometriosis. And one thing that really sticks out with every single one of them is a very similar experience with trying to get the diagnosis. Including like some people, like in your article, you mentioned it takes on average 7 to 10 years. I have known someone who took more than that. And I'm just curious if you have any ideas of, like, is there something we can do to make it easier to diagnose something, especially being such a common thing?
Right now, I don't think that the research is there, because I think I talk about it in my article, the only way to truly diagnose it is through surgery. There's unfortunately there's not a blood test yet. There's not, you know, the flu test for it. I don't think the research is there yet. But a friend of mine, and he did ask that I not name him, but he had a female soldier. He reached out to me and he said, hey, I don't think something's just not right. Can you tell me how to handle this? And I said, if she's getting pushback from her PCM, these are the things that specifically she needs to say. These are the things that will at least get her to that referral process. He called me back a little while later, and he was able to talk to her. She used that information, and she was able to get that surgery and get a diagnosis within 6 months, all because he reached out and said, hey, I think something is wrong. There's more research coming out every day, but I don't think it's there yet that we're going to have something other than surgery to diagnose it. Not yet. But I know that in 2023, funding for endometriosis research went up astronomically. I have the numbers saved in one of my briefs for the actual numbers, but it's certainly getting more traction, more awareness. A lot of celebrities are now coming out with their story. Bindi Irwin, Amy Schumer. I can't think of her name, but she played the sister to in the TV show Dexter. She was the sister. Mm. She has also come out as having been diagnosed with it. So now that we've got bigger names, I think we're going to get that research funding now. But I feel for your friend that it took more than the 10 years. And that's on the civilian side. So we talk about the medical, just how long it takes to get diagnosed, but there's a financial impact on the civilian side that we don't necessarily see on the Army side, because every time they go to the doctor, that's a copay. Tests that get run, this part of it wasn't covered by your insurance. That's another amount of copay. Oh, well, you saw a specialist this time instead of just a regular OBGYN. So that's coded differently. We're not going to cover that at all. I know people who have taken mortgages out on their homes to pay for the testing just to get to that diagnostic surgery.
Going back to the leadership aspect of it, for the younger NCOs, what can they do to create a climate where they feel that their soldiers can be comfortable to approach them with things like this? You know, it's very personal, very private. And I know you mentioned it earlier, you know, somebody who's 18, 19 years old is going to be very hesitant to talk. So what can they do? NCOs do to leave the door open to make, you know, a young woman feel comfortable by coming on to them with a situation like this.
First thing is to look in the mirror. Are you somebody that you would have felt comfortable with at the age of 18, 19? Are you comfortable with your leadership style enough that you would feel comfortable going to you? If you're not, then you need to change your approach. And don't look at it as, oh, well, of course I would be comfortable coming to me. Okay, well, if you're 25, 26, but your soldiers are 18, think back to when you were 18. Do you feel that your 18-year-old self could come to your leadership style and say, something very personal is going on and I need help? If that's not the type of leadership style that you have, then adjust fire. My previous first sergeant always said, get comfortable being uncomfortable.
That's good advice, you know, especially when dealing with this kind of subject.
I would ask, Sergeant Mosco, what would you say to other, you know, females in the Army that may be going through similar experiences, not just endometriosis, but something that they don't feel comfortable necessarily bringing up or trying to get help for, what would you tell them?
Don't be silent. I was obviously silent for several years, and it eventually cost my fertility. So don't do what I did. Speak up if there's a problem. Nobody can help you if you don't tell them that there's a problem. There are more people who are willing to support you and be advocates for you than there are who are going to think less of you. If you have something going on and you need an advocate, or you wanted to go talk to your leadership about something but you don't know how to bring it up, I will be on the phone with you. We can do a Teams call together. I will step up and be that person, because I wonder how things could have been different if I had had somebody who had said, I will stand with you. I will be an advocate when you can.
This applies also. We talked about endometriosis specifically, but there's, there's other women's health issues. And we can't close the door on those just because we're just focusing on this now. So when it comes to anything, I think what you said about networking, dealing on people who might be better at helping somebody because maybe they know more about it, or maybe the individuals might feel more comfortable with them, or whatever the case may be. But it can't be just, we're not just talking about endometriosis. That's what I'm saying, is that women's health, there's a lot of issues, a lot of the things that you guys deal with that many of these of us guys don't really, are not familiar with it, or just don't understand, or whatever the case may be. But I would like to say that I personally like to keep my mind and my heart open and use empathy and try to do the best I can. And that's, I think, all we can do to when we're trying to reach these NCOs, is that that's what we hope that you do, as NCOs.
So as a male NCO, obviously I have not experienced any issues that come up with women's health. So I really can't properly understand how any of that is. What would you recommend to other male NCOs that might have a female soldier if any medical problems arise that they just don't understand and just don't know how to talk about with these soldiers?
So that answer is kind of multifaceted. If you have a soldier who comes to you and says, I have polycystic ovary syndrome, which is commonly known as PCOS, but you don't know anything about that, I mean, take 5 minutes out of your day and Google it. And then say, hey, soldier, I don't know what that is. Can you tell me your experiences? And then later, Google it. Do some of your own research, your own, I don't know what this is, but I need to learn about it because it's affecting my soldier. And if it's affecting my soldier, then it's going to start affecting my readiness. There's some responsibility on the NCO that when someone does trust them enough to come to them and say, I have whatever this issue is, I have no idea what that is. If you come to me and you say, hey, I shattered my kneecap. Wow, first of all, that sucks. And then I know nothing about the recovery of a shattered kneecap. So let me go Google what you've told me. Okay, what is the recovery time for a shattered kneecap? Learn a little bit. Even if it makes you uncomfortable, learn about it. Because the more that anybody learns about any one topic, the more comfortable that you're going to get talking about it. And that level of comfort is going to come through in your leadership, no matter who you are.
Do you know any leaders who actually got it right? I mean, can you tell us, maybe you have some stories about some NCOs who actually got it right? Tell us about that.
Absolutely. So my previous unit is where my health just took a nosedive. we learned that IVF was not going to be an option for us. And my husband and I made the decision that since children weren't going to be on the table, there was no reason for me to continue practically dying every month. So I let my first sergeant, who had been in the seat for less than a week, he was going to get a con leave packet come across his desk that was going to be about 45 days. So I knew then that I had to say something. And I walked into his office, and it's First Sergeant Oscar Perez. And I hit the high spots of what was going on. And he looked at me and he said, "Well, that sucks." And I appreciated that there were no flowery words. There was no hunt the good stuff. There was no Hallmark greeting, find the silver lining. I appreciated the fact that he said, "That sucks." And then he signed my paperwork. But after my hysterectomy, when I was still having problems, we still didn't know what was going on. I was still spending what felt like hundreds of days at appointments. Every time he checked in on me, every time he said, "Are you doing okay? Do you and your husband need anything?" The very first time that I said, "Hey, I want to do an NCOPD on this," he said, "Cool, go for it. Send me a shell in 2 weeks." That one NCO caring, that one NCO saying, "Yeah, you want to do an NCOPD? Sure," led to what I'm able to do now. If he had said no in that very first, "Can I do an NCOPD?" or if he had said, "Yeah, I'll sign your paperwork," and then immediately, you know, gone and had a conversation with, you know, medical and said, "You know, I want this girl out of my formation," we wouldn't be having this conversation at all, in the least. And then Sergeant First Class Shauna Davis, she became my mentor. She became my friend. She became the female NCO that I wish that I had had when things started. She held my hand in hospital rooms when I had an emergency surgery where I very seriously almost bled to death. She held my hand almost all the way to the operating room. She called my mom and dad and said, "Hey, I have your daughter. She's going into emergency surgery, but like, she's fine. It's good." She called my first sergeant. They waited until I came back from surgery. And every single time that something went wrong, they had my back. Someone accused me of, when I had come back from having my hysterectomy, somebody made the statement. Obviously, they did not know that I could overhear them. And they said, "Well, we thought that she would be rested and ready to go, given that she's been on vacation for 6 weeks." This was after I had literal organs removed from my body, and I was accused of going on a 6-week vacation. And Sergeant Davis absolutely said, "You have no idea what she has been through over the past 6 weeks." I don't know if she heard or if she knew that I overheard her defending me that day. But those two absolutely got it right when they didn't have a handbook either. They had no idea what I was dealing with. They didn't know what to do, but they did the right thing every single time. Every time.
Out of all of the things that we've talked about today, what is the one point you would like to leave? What is the main thought that you would like, the main takeaway that you would like from our entire conversation today?
recognize that women's health is how you take care of the mission. Because without the people, your mission doesn't get accomplished. If you take care of your people, they will take care of you.
Thank you. Thanks again for being here, for your bravery. Thank you. Thank you for joining us, and thank you to our audience. Remember to put your knowledge to the page, submit articles, and get published with the NCO Journal. Don't forget to check out our webpage and follow us on social media. We'll catch you next time on the NCO Journal Podcast.